Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar with the ICC. I'm Nicole Davenport, new GTLD Communications Manager for ICANN. Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to cover a few things. The webinar is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published on the new GTLD microsite. The running time of the webinar is 90 minutes. We'll start with a presentation and end with a question and answer session. You can ask a question via phone or in the Adobe Connect questions and comments pod. Questions submitted before the webinar will be addressed first, followed by phone questions, and then those questions submitted online. Dial-in numbers can be found on the webinar page of the microsite at http://newgtlds.icann.org/webinars. The conference ID is Objections and Dispute Resolution Webinar. To enter the phone queue, dial star 1. To exit the phone queue, dial star 2. Please make sure that your phone is not on speaker when you ask a question. Now I'd like to turn it over to Trang Nguyen.
Thank you, Nicole. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us this morning on our Objections webinar update. Over the past few months, and including at the Buenos Aires ICANN meeting, we heard a lot of questions from you, from other applicants who may not be able to join us this morning, as well as from other parties that are affected by the objections filed. And these questions were primarily around the timing and process of dispute proceedings. So these questions made us realize that perhaps some additional information about these topics needed to be communicated. So today's webinar is going to be focused on providing you with more information about the procedures of dispute proceedings, specifically for the community and limited public interest objections. With regards to these procedures, I do want to remind you and to reemphasize that these procedures are not dictated by ICANN. Each dispute resolution service provider has its own procedures for administering dispute proceedings. For community and limited public interest objections, the International Center of Expertise of the International Chamber of Commerce, also known as the ICC, is the dispute resolution service provider. And the ICC is an internationally known and well-regarded provider of dispute resolution services, has its own set of procedures that it follows. I am very pleased to have with me today several representatives from the ICC. They are here to share with you details of the procedures that they use to administer the community and limited public interest objections. We have shared with the ICC the questions that we have heard from you, and they have tried to tailor their presentation today to address those questions. So I hope that you will find their presentation informative. So now, without further ado, I am going to hand it over to Hannah Tumble, Senior Counsel of the ICC, to introduce the ICC team that will be presenting to you today. And webinar procedures, as with all other ICANN webinars, we are going to have a question and answer session up with the ICC's presentation. So Hannah, the microphone is yours.
Thank you very much. Good evening to everybody from Paris. Welcome on behalf of ICC to this webinar. We are very glad to have this opportunity to clarify some parts of the procedure and to answer to those questions which were already asked to us ahead of this webinar, as well as any questions which might be coming up in the course of the coming 90 minutes. First of all, I would like to present to you the members of ICC who are here with me in Paris. We have on the call Andrea Calavares, who is the Director of ICC Dispute Resolution Services, as well as the Secretary General of the ICC International Court of Arbitration. Further on, we have Emmanuel Julie Vevedas, who is the General Counsel of ICC. We then also have Spela Kozak with us, who is the Deputy Manager at the ICC International Center for Expertise. And you've already heard before that my name is Hannah Tümpel, and I'm the Senior Counsel and Manager of the ICC International Center for Expertise. What we propose to do in the coming minutes is to go through some points of the procedure on which we have received questions or queries. And you see that in the slide in front of you. So we will start off with a bit of background information again about the center and the objections handled by the center. We will then give you a general update about the status of the cases filed with the center, because there were some questions about that. We will then focus on for quite some time on the scrutiny process, so on the questions as to how ICC conducts the scrutiny of the draft expert determinations and what that actually means and what ICC's role is in so far. We will then turn to the questions regarding the stay of proceedings and explain what ICC's practice is in this regard and also whether there are any foreseeable changes in the future coming in this regard. We will then turn to payments, or more specifically to reimbursement, so to questions regarding the reimbursement of payments from ICC to the parties. We will then shortly again talk you through the web page to show you which information can be found on which parts of our website. And finally, we'll remind you of the contact details of the center and how to best get in touch with us. So starting off, I would like to remind you again of the structure of ICC's dispute resolution services. As many of you will know, there's the International Court of Arbitration dealing with all arbitration cases filed with ICC, and separate to that is the International Center for ADR, which consists also of the Center for Expertise, and it is the Center for Expertise which deals with all cases filed in relation to the new GTLD dispute resolution procedure. The center itself consists on the one hand side of the center staff, so the lawyers and assistant staff working with the center here in Paris, and secondly of the standing committee, which is constituted pursuant to the appendix of the ICC rules for expertise, which is a separate body which advises the center and which has important functions pursuant to the rules. I explain this in particular at this stage because we'll be speaking about this again further on when we talk about the scrutiny process. As you all know, ICC was asked by ICANN to administer two of the four objection grounds, namely limited public interest objections and community objections. And as you also know, and I apologize for this funny picture in the middle of the slide that was somehow happened when things were transferred from PowerPoint to PDF, but the governing rules and documents for all the procedures which are administered by us are firstly, of course, the GTLD applicant guidebook from ICANN, including Module 3, or importantly, Module 3, setting out the dispute resolution procedure. Secondly, the ICC rules for expertise. Thirdly, the specific practice note which we published with regard to the new GTLD cases. And then also the new the Appendix B to the expertise rules governing the financial part of these proceedings. The process, so the procedural aspects, are governed by attachment to Module 3, so the new GTLD dispute resolution procedure set out by ICANN, as well as the ICC rules for expertise. However, any questions regarding the substantive part of these objections, so the standards which govern these proceedings and pursuant to which the expert panels decide on the substantive questions, can all and only and exclusively be found in the applicant guidebook from ICANN. So none of the ICC rules have any influence on the actual substantive questions at stake, but the ICC rules and the practice note only govern the process. I would then like to turn to an update on the status of cases so that you have an overview as to where things are. The status is an update as of this afternoon, Paris time. ICC has received a total of 137 cases within the deadline set by ICANN. Of those 137 cases, 38 cases were terminated prior to the expert determination. These terminations happened either because parties withdrew the objection or the application, because they settled their dispute, or because of non-payment and subsequent withdrawal of the cases by ICC pursuant to the ICANN dispute resolution procedure. That means that we have a remaining number of 99 cases. Those 99 cases, currently 17 are stayed by the center, and 2 cases are stayed by the expert. We'll talk again about that a bit later today, but it basically means that they are stayed by the center if the file wasn't yet transferred to the expert panel, and the decision on the stay has been taken by the expert if the file had been transferred to the expert panel. That leaves us with a remaining 80 cases. Of those 80 cases, in 49 cases, the expert determination has been notified to the parties, and accordingly the cases have been terminated and are now being closed. And in 31 cases, the draft expert determinations are still in the scrutiny process, in many of those cases in the very final stages of the scrutiny process. That also brings us to the next part of the presentation, which is the ICC scrutiny process. I know that there were many questions asked in that regard, and this is why I'm especially delighted to have Andrea Caldevares with us, who, as I told you before, is the director of ICC Dispute Resolution Services, as well as the secretary of the ICC International Court of Arbitration. And so he will be an excellent speaker to talk to you about what the ICC scrutiny process is, how it works, and what its advantages are. So I'm handing over the microphone to him.
Thank you, Hannah, and welcome to all participants to this webinar. As Hannah said, what I will try to do in the next few minutes is to describe the ICC scrutiny process, and especially to focus on the purpose of this process. But first of all, the procedural provisions on which this process is based. One is to be found in Article 21, Attachment to Module 3 of the, there is Attachment to Module 3 of the new DTLD dispute resolution procedure. Article 21, the expert determination, which provides that the panel shall submit its expert determination in draft form to the provider for scrutiny as to the form before it is signed, unless such scrutiny is specifically excluded by the applicable rules of the provider. The modifications proposed to the panel, if any, shall address only the form of the expert determination. This is an important point on which I will come back in a few minutes. And then the signed expert determination shall be communicated to the dispute resolution provider, which in turn will communicate that expert determination to the parties and ICANN. And the second relevant rule is to be found in the ICC expertise rules. Article 12, paragraph 6 provides quite a similar provision that the expert's report shall be submitted in draft form to the center before it is signed. And the center may lay down modifications, once again, only as to the form of the report. No report shall be communicated to the parties by the expert. No report shall be signed by the expert prior to the center's approval of such a report. I would like to say that the process is based on a long-standing experience of the ICC Court of Arbitration with respect to the scrutiny of draft arbitration awards. So even if the process is relatively new applied to expertise, it is based once again on a very long-standing experience of the ICC with this kind of process. And the reason why the ICC has, both in its arbitration and in its expertise rules, always provided for a scrutiny process is that it considers it presents several advantages. First of all, and generally speaking, it contributes to improving the overall quality of expert determination. We'll see how and in what respect. It reduces the risk of inconsistencies between expert determination. Now, this is a limited effect and a limited power the center has when it comes to the substance of the decision. Third, the scrutiny allows the center to verify that due process has been respected, so it ensures respect of due process. And I would say more trivially, it contributes to eliminating mistakes or clerical errors from expert determination. Who participates in the scrutiny process? Well, first of all, the legal staff of the ICC International Center for Expertise, the Standing Committee of the Center, which is a body of independent experts serving for the center, and then, of course, the expert panel. This slide describes in a very schematic manner of the process. You will see, first of all, there is the transmission of the draft expert determination to the center. There is a first level of review by the legal staff of the center, a second level review by a senior member of the center, and then the draft expert determination is submitted to the standing committee, which scrutinizes it. After scrutiny, the comments of the standing committee are transmitted to the panel, and these are comments on the form of the draft, which must be taken into account by the expert panel, and possibly other comments which are submitted to the expert for consideration. On the basis of this communication, the panel proceeds to amending the draft and to sending it to the center. The changes are therefore included by the expert. The expert signs the expert determination, which is then sent to the center, which notifies it to the parties. If the changes required by the center are not incorporated in the draft by the expert, then the draft is sent back to the standing committee. And this applies only to changes of form that have been required by the standing committee. So you will have understood from what I've just said that the scrutiny process have several aspects and involves several aspects of the expert determination. There is a control of form. There is an editorial control. And then there is a more substantial analysis of the draft determination, which involves also substantive issues, and in particular the sense of the reasoning of the draft determination, and possibly also legal aspects and the overall coherence of the expert determination. In practice, of course, the practice of the center in scrutinizing draft determinations is extremely variegated. So it's difficult to summarize all the possible cases that are presented to the center, but we summarize in this slide the most frequently recurring issues, which are, for example, a control in the date indicated in the draft determination. As I already mentioned, due process, therefore the respect by the expert panel of the parties' right to participate in the process and to be informed of all steps of the procedure. References in the draft expert determination will also be checked in the scrutiny process. Extremely important, the wording of the dispositive, which is of course the most important part of the expert determination. The process also aims at verifying that the expert determination is complete, that nothing has been forgotten by the experts that was submitted to them, and obviously also possibly language and mistakes, considering that not all experts are mother tongue in the language used in the procedure. And I will conclude with this message, I would say, which is that neither the center nor the standing committee can change the substantive decision of the expert panel. Even more clearly than in the provision applicable to arbitration, in the arbitration rules, you will have noticed that the applicable rules here focus only on modifications that the center and the standing committee can lay down as to the form. Therefore, there is absolutely no kind of interference of the center or of the standing committee with the outcome of the case. I hope this was sufficiently clear and complete, and now I hand over back to Hannah for the rest of the presentation.
Thank you very much, Andrea. So as I told you before, we'll now move to a few other topics with regard to which questions were raised in advance to this webinar. The first of them being the stay of proceedings. As you will remember from what I said before, from the remaining 99 cases which have not yet been terminated prior to the expert determination, 17 are currently stayed by the center and 2 by the expert. So I wanted to give you some background information in this regard. First of all, I wanted to clarify who is in charge of deciding on whether proceedings are stayed or not. Every time a file has not yet been transferred to the expert panel and parties decide that they wish to request a stay of the proceedings, such decision will be taken by ICC. However, once the file has been transferred to the expert panel, then it is on the expert panel itself to decide whether it will grant a request for a stay of the proceedings. With regard to ICC's practice in those cases where the file has not yet been transferred and where accordingly ICC will take the decision on the stay of the proceedings, ICC's practice is, as also in all other dispute resolution procedures administered by ICC, that if the stay is requested jointly by all parties, ICC will always grant such stay. The same applies if the parties request the extension of a stay. Again, if it is jointly requested by all parties, ICC will grant such extension. We develop now a practice that we usually grant an extension of 30 to 45 days and invite the parties at the end of such time limit to inform us whether they wish to request an extension of the stay or whether they wish to resume the proceeding. However, what is important to also know that our practice is that if the request for a stay is submitted by one party only, the stay will not be granted, and so accordingly the case will continue. This is mainly based on the fact that the ICANN dispute resolution procedure, as well as the ICC rules for expertise, do not have any provision under which the center could decide on such unilateral requests if the other party does not agree. If the file has been transferred to the expert, it is on the expert panel and in its discretion to take a decision as to whether or not to stay the proceeding. ICANN has informed ICC lately that they are considering whether they will give ICC a direction in the form to an amendment to the ICANN new GTLD dispute resolution procedure in such way as to tell ICC not to further extend the stay of proceedings even if requested jointly by all parties. However, that has not yet happened, but some of you will have noted that in our latest letters where we have granted the extension of stay, we have also said that this might change in due course if so required by ICANN. However, unless and until ICANN tells us something accordingly, for the time being, ICC would continue with the practice as is, and as I just pointed out to you, so any joint request will always be granted. I would then like to move on to the question of payment and reimbursement. As you know, at the end of each proceeding, at least the prevailing party will be reimbursed its payments, its advance payments in the proceeding pursuant to the new GTLD dispute resolution procedure from ICANN, and in some cases when the actual final costs of the proceedings are lower than the costs estimated by the center, then of course the according overpayment will also be reimbursed. How do we do this? At the end of each case, we invite the parties to fill in banking instructions. And after receipt of these completed banking instructions, ICC's accounting department is then asked to proceed with the reimbursement. ICC's accounting department has regular payment sessions which take place every 2 weeks. And accordingly, at that point, they will then proceed with all payments and all reimbursements which have been demanded at that point. This means that usually there will be around 14 days between the times that we have received the completed banking instruction and the invitation or the payments being processed by ICC. Then, of course, there might be some additional time which is taken by the bank to process the payment depending on where the payment is going to. You must, of course, also keep in mind that there might be certain reasons why reimbursements are prolonged, take longer. An obvious one is, of course, when we don't get the banking instructions back, and we have actually quite a lot of pending cases where the parties have not at all returned banking instructions, or when we receive incomplete or wrong banking instructions. Accordingly, it's very important to keep in mind when you are invited to fill in the form we sent to you, to really fill in all parts of this form, because it is really specifically that has specific reasons that we ask for all that information. And it's very important that it's filled in completely and correctly so that we can then immediately proceed with the payment. So far, out of over 100 reimbursements we have dealt with, however, there was only a problem in 2 cases where payment was returned because of a misreading of the information. All other payments and reimbursements, to our knowledge, have gone through and have been received by the party. Further, I was asked to tell you again or to remind you again of the website and our contact details where to find the different information. You know, a specific part of ICC's website is dedicated to the new GTLD dispute resolution procedure. You will find that in the section on expertise, there's a subsection called ICANN New GTLD Dispute Resolution. You see that in the red circle on the slide. And you will see that there are 2 relevant parts if you want to have a status update with regard to the cases. The first one, that is the top red arrow on this slide, is with regard to the pending cases. So there you can see an update as to the status of each of the cases. And under 2 bullet points down on expert determination, we publish and every time we have notified an expert determination to the parties, we publish it there, unless the expert panel should have decided that it should not be published. However, to date, we did not have any case yet where the expert panel has decided that it shouldn't be published. So until now, all expert determinations which have been notified, you will find them there. Sometimes, due to the synchronization of the website, it takes a few hours until you can actually see it, but it is always put online on the same day as the notification of the expert determination to the parties and to ICANN. And finally, I wanted to remind all of you again of our contact details. Our postal address has changed since the 21st of October. However, much more relevant for these proceedings, our mail address and our website have remained absolutely unchanged. So any request, any question, any query, any concern with regard to these proceedings should always be directed per email to the email address which you see on this slide, which is expertise@iccwbo.org. And the website which I just showed to you can be found on www.iccexpertise.org. And of course, you also see there our direct phone line. We are here, of course, to answer the questions of the parties, and many of you have made use of that during the last weeks and months. So do feel free to give us a call when you have any questions, and we'll of course be happy to answer them. Talking about questions, I believe that Chuang will now open the discussion. We have tried to answer all those questions we could answer which were asked to us beforehand already in our presentation now. Some questions we will answer unilaterally to those parties which have asked them because they regard specific cases, and due to our confidentiality obligations, we cannot discuss them in this case, but we've already contacted those who have asked them and will set up separate calls with them. And we are, of course, looking forward to any further questions you might have now. Thank you, and I give it back over to you, Chuang.
Thank you, Hannah. So now we're going to go ahead and start our question and answer session. As we have done with the other webinars, we will we have one question that was submitted before the webinar that we're going to go ahead and read, and then after that we're going to go to the phones. So I invite those of you on the line, if you have any questions for the ICC, to please dial in. And we'll take the questions on the phone first, and then after that, any questions that were submitted in the Adobe Connect pod. So please give us a minute to get the team started with the Q&A. Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question on the phone lines, please press star 1 at this time. To withdraw your question, please press star 2. We have an audio question from the line of Ray Fassett with Registry Group. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Ray Fassett. A question for the ICC. Under the ICC community objection, there were four standards that a panelist had to find in favor of the objector. If it could be proven that the facts relied upon by the panelist for a standard was wrong, is there any recourse to bring this error of fact to the attention of the panelist or the ICC?
Yeah, Emmanuel Jolivet speaking. No, there is no recourse foreseen under the rules. So it is not something that could be addressed by the panel, I'm afraid.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions on the phone?
Yes, we do have a question from the line of Constantine Roussos with Dot Music. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Constantine. I have some questions on accountability and responsibility of the ICC. From hearing the discussions, I would say I'm very disappointed, and I think Ray hit it on the head when he spoke about facts. In other words, misleading statements, false statements presented by either the objector or the objected to applicant, that there's no recourse. And first I want to ask, how can the ICC and ICANN put together, you know, such an expensive process where anyone can say pigs can fly, and someone like a panelist can say, okay, I'll take that reasoning without being accountable. So this all goes down to, again, the issue of the expert panelist. And my other question is, how are these panelists selected? And since the standing committee has no feedback in terms of the decision, how can one ensure that this expert, A, is an expert, he knows what he's talking about, and B, how can there be any quality assurance when, let's say, objected to applicants can make a change of position, you know, since all these arguments are confidential and can't be shared, then any objected to applicant, even the objector, can be writing rubbish without any accountability. And last but not least, the other question is, how can there be a procedural error in part of both ICANN and the ICC to create a community objection? Again, I repeat, a community, the word community, and only one organization is allowed to object. That to me is unacceptable when you're looking at generic terms where, you know, one organization has the entire liability of proving that they're a clearly delineated community representing a significant portion of that community. So those are my questions. We would appreciate them to be answered. And I assure you both the ICC and ICANN are responsible and accountable, because a lot of money has been spent by both the objectors and the objected to applicants, and we want a fair process and we want a transparent process. Thank you.
This is Hannah Tindall speaking. Thank you, Mr. Rousseau, for your question. I think there is this part or parts of your question which relate to the guidebook and the standards therein, as well as the process set up by ICANN. So maybe I can propose that first somebody from ICANN maybe responds to that as far as possible, and we will then talk about the questions raised by you with regard to the appointment and the selection of the expert panel. Maybe we can first give it back to you.
Thank you, Hannah, and thank you, Constantinos, for the question. This is Krang. Let me go ahead and address your question with regards to the objection process overall. As you know, that being part of the applicant guidebook was developed over years of consultation with the community, and it is one of the mechanism that we've built into the guidebook. Through that discussion, it was not something that ICANN developed, you know, on our own. So you, as a part of the community, very well understand that process. So that's to address that question. And so now, Hannah, I'll go ahead and let you address the questions with regards to the appointment of the expert.
Yes, thank you very much. For us, the main concern when appointing the experts was overall their procedural experience, because in our view it was of utmost importance in these cases that we had experts who were experienced in conducting proceedings and writing expert determinations or determinations in other dispute resolution proceedings, and who were able to deal with a scenario of a dispute resolution process which was not yet tested, which implied very specific but in parts also very difficult and vague standards, which involved a lot of relevance for all of the parties involved, and where they had to deal with all of these questions within a very short amount of time and come to an appropriate conclusion based on the submissions of the parties in this mostly written, as you know, process. So accordingly, when choosing the people, and there were, of course, slightly different considerations for the community objections because we had one expert panels and differently to the limited public interest objection panels where we chose three experts, which in part also had different experience and different qualifications and backgrounds as to compose a full panel, but it was overall procedural experience which was relevant for us when choosing these experts, and having seen the expert determinations, we are confident that in so far we have taken the right decisions and have appointed the right experts in that regard. As to the questions asked with regard to transparency, maybe I can just add from our point of view that there is no rule in the ICC rules for expertise which would not allow parties to, for example, publish their submissions. We are, of course, bound as an institution by confidentiality obligations, so we would not have the right to publish any submissions by the parties online. However, because of the provisions foreseen in the new GTLD dispute resolution procedure by ICANN, we do, of course, publish the expert determinations themselves online, which, as you know, is fundamentally different, actually, to any other ICC dispute resolution procedure. So insofar, this process is extremely transparent, and it is set up to be very transparent by ICANN. So I hope insofar that maybe relates to that question, so that parties would, of course, be free insofar if they would see it appropriate to disclose the submissions they have made. So far from us, maybe we have another question.
Thank you, Hannah. Is there anyone else on the phone?
Yes, we have another audio question from the line of Christina Rosette with IPC. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks very much. I had a clarifying question with regard to the scrutiny process, and what I'm hoping you can answer is whether or not the parties participating in that scrutiny process are requested to or required to read the submissions of the parties and any other communications the parties may have had with the center in connection with that proceeding. Thank you.
Yes, indeed, the party submission are part of the scrutiny process, because one of the things which we pay attention to, for example, is that the expert determination as fully as necessary summarizes the party submissions, and so part of the scrutiny process is also to take care of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next caller?
We have a question from the line of John Nevitt with Donut. Please go ahead.
Thank you. It's John. Thanks for your presentation. I think my question about the limited nature of the scrutiny has been answered, but I did have a question about refunds. The ICC is withholding the $5,000 filing fee paid by each side in the refund amounts. Those are non-refundable according to the ICC. But according to the applicant guidebook in Article 13 of the procedures, Section E, all advance payments of costs, which are defined as both the filing fees and the panel fees, should be refundable to the prevailing side. I think the policy was that whoever won shouldn't be out of pocket; it should be loser pays. So I'm wondering why the $5,000 is being withheld, or 5,000 euros rather, is being withheld from the prevailing party.
Hannah, would you like to address that question?
As you know, the cost provisions in the ICANN procedure were subsequently also part of the Appendix 3, which we drafted in consultation with ICANN. And in so far, it was decided that from the beginning, that the registration fee, as set out in, I'm just looking for the exact reference, in Article 1.1 of Appendix 3 to the expertise rule, is a non-refundable amount, and it is, however, in the discretion of ICC in certain cases whether to refund it, but the general rule is that it is not refundable as under any other ICC dispute resolution procedure.
Just so I'm clear, Hannah, so the ICC and ICANN issued rules subsequent to the guidebook that we all relied on when we filed our applications that changed the rules from a refundable filing fee to a non-refundable filing fee?
I see your point, John. I do recall, of course, discussing this question with ICANN beforehand and even having presentations on that and so on. I must say that I would like to get back to you in that regard in writing So that we just again check sort of the history on how this provision was drafted and how the discussions went and so far, so that I can answer that correctly.
Sure, that'd be helpful. Thank you very much.
Sure, pleasure.
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you, John. Are there any other callers on the phone?
I'm showing no further audio questions at this time. Please continue.
Thank you, operator. So now we're going to move over to a question that was submitted to us prior to the webinar. It was submitted by Daniel Rogna. I believe this is the question directed to the ICC, Hannah, so I'll read it to you. Regarding limited public interest objections, the trend among ICC panelists has been to defer to future ICANN and GAC advice on certain policy issues. At the same time, the ICC has stated that it will not allow any more extensions for pending objections. How can these two positions be reconciled, and what can we tell our clients about this situation?
Yes, thank you very much. I hope, and maybe we can go back in the slides otherwise to the slides when I was talking about the stay of proceedings, where this refers to. As many of you will know, quite many of the limited public interest objections are currently stayed. As I pointed out before, every time such stay is jointly requested by the parties, or if an extension of such stay is jointly requested by the parties prior to the transfer of the file to the expert panel, ICC will decide on such request. And until now, and still for the time being, we will always grant such stay and such an extension of such stay if jointly requested by the parties. So nothing has changed in so far. I think in the question there might be a slight misunderstanding, because as I've also pointed out before, the only thing which has changed that is that we have drawn the parties' attention to the fact that ICANN might decide to change this practice and to order ICC not to prolong the stay of proceedings any further. And we wanted to make sure that the parties are aware of this possible change and have heads up in that regard. Accordingly, we included an according new language into our letters in that regard, in the latest extension letters. But you will also see that we have still continued to grant the extension of stays, and we will continue to do so from our side. There is no necessity to change that or to proceed and continue with these proceedings if requested by both parties. I hope that clarifies the question.
Thank you, Hannah. So now I am going to move to questions that were submitted in the Adobe Connect room. The first question that was submitted in the Adobe Connect room is, does ICANN have a position on the acceptability of the ICC's quality control delays of over 4 months and running from the date that the ICC received expert decisions? Do such delays contradict the mandatory timelines of the AGB? So I will go ahead and answer that question. ICANN supports the ICC following its internal scrutiny procedures, which were anticipated in the guidebook in Article 21B of the new GTLD dispute resolution procedures. ICANN will continue to work closely with the ICC both on the timing and the progress of the objection proceedings. So that's our response to that question. The next question that was submitted in the Adobe Connect room is, if the scrutiny process is largely clerical and not substantive, why have the delays been so significant in light of the extremely high fees charged by the ICC? So Hannah, I am going to ask you to respond to that question, please.
Yes, this is Andrea Carlevaris. I think the time required to complete the process is in a way explained by the slides, which shows the relatively complex nature of this process and the several passages it requires, and passages that we consider necessary to assure precisely the quality control the scrutiny process is aimed at. There are in this process no, I mean, this is a seamless process. The various passages do not require, there are, so to say, these are, this is a continuous chain of controls. So it is, and I would also like to stress that it is not, this process is not entirely in the hands of the center, because the comments formulated by the center and the standing committee are sent to the expert panel, and it then depends on the reaction and reactivity of the expert panel whether the process can be completed more or less swiftly. And in certain occasions, of course, it also depends, as you can also see from the slides, by the fact that certain changes as to the form of the expert determination have not been taken into account by the expert panel.
Maybe I can also further add, this is Hannah speaking again, that as you know, we have many related cases. Some of them have been consolidated, others were submitted to the same expert panel because they relate to the same string. And in those cases, we want to make sure, in order to ensure the consistency of these decisions, to scrutinize them in the same together and to notify them together. And accordingly, they have also sometimes, for the different bunch of decisions, the whole scrutiny time takes longer because it involves many cases, instead of just one which needs to go through this control circle as set out in the slide which you are just seeing. So far from our side.
Thank you, Hannah. Next question in the Adobe Connect room comes from Chris Lahat. Is it part of the review process to examine consistency across determinations so that the rulings are not inconsistent? Hannah, can I also ask you to address that question, please?
Well, I think this is Andrea Carlevaris. As I stated, this is certainly one of the purposes of the scrutiny process, although the center is not in a position to guarantee the consistency, precisely because consistency concerns the substance of the expert determination. So there are limited powers. Of course, this may be part of the comments the center conveys to the expert panel, but it is not certainly something that can be imposed on the expert.
Thank you, Andreas. Next question comes from John Stile. The ICC stated that decisions are posted online the same day the parties are notified, yet according to the website, there are roughly 50 decisions that are pending, while the ICC has stated that there are only 30 that remains in the scrutiny process. Why the gap, and what is the anticipated timeline for publication of the remaining decisions? Hannah, can I also ask you to address that, please?
Yes, of course. Thank you very much. I will actually scroll back to the page with the overview on the status update, because that will explain the difference which was seen by John on the website. So as I pointed out, there were 99 remaining cases. Of those, 19 are currently stayed. So of course, in those, the expert determination is outstanding. However, they are not going forward at this stage. Most of them, or many of them, are stayed prior to the transfer of the file to the expert panel, and some of them shortly after, some of them even prior to the appointment of the expert panel. And so of the cases which are currently going forward, we have 80, and of those, 49 expert determinations were notified, and 31 are still in the scrutiny process. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. And then just to address the question with regards to when the decisions are posted online, is that typically occur on the same day that the parties are notified?
Yes, absolutely. They are notified on the same day. There might sometimes be a slight delay of a few hours due to the synchronization of the website, which is out of our hands, but we put them, we send them to ICANN after we notified it to the parties, and we also put it online on the same day.
Thank you. Next question comes from Godfrey Jordan. And this is a question for the ICC. How many times a week or a month does the standing committee meet and work?
Yeah, thank you very much. The standing committee works continuously, but every time, if we go back, maybe I will just scroll down to the relevant slide again. Once the second-level review from a member of the legal staff of the center has taken place, then the documents are sent to the standing committee. They are invited to scrutinize the expert determination, and then they are given or invited to do that within a certain time limit, and then they send it back to the center, so it's not bound to specific days or weeks.
Thank you, Hannah. Next question that I see in the Adobe Connect room also comes from Guffer Jordan. The actual path of determination suggests the end of the process in 15 to 20 weeks. Could you please accelerate? Could you accelerate and communicate? The deadline.
Yes,
can I ask you to comment on that?
Yes, if I understand correctly, that's a question as to the outstanding waiting time for those cases which haven't been notified yet. As it was pointed out by Andrea, certain steps of the scrutiny process are not in the hands of the center because we do depend on the expert panel, and also if a certain draft goes back numerous times between the center, the standing committee, and the expert panel, there might be further delays. However, with regard to all cases where we've received the draft expert determination by early December, we do expect that the vast majority of those cases will be notified by the end of January.
Thank you, Hannah. Next question comes from Christina Rosette, and this is the question for ICANN. If ICANN will be ordering ICC not to further stay any proceedings, when does ICANN anticipate doing so, and when would that decision be made?
Hi, thanks, Trang. This is Amy Stathis for the record. Christina, thanks for the question. In terms of that process, we're continuing to monitor the various factors that are cited for a stay and the number of continued stays going forward. And as we do that, we're evaluating that against how ongoing stays might affect both the parties involved in the objection as well as other parties that are part of the new GTLD program processes. And as we evaluate that, we're looking at what, if anything, we might want to do with regards to the stay issue. But we haven't made any decisions at this point in time.
Thank you, Amy. Next question comes from Chris Lahat. It's a question for ICC. What does the ICC do when there are decisions which are actually inconsistent in the law which they apply?
Well, there is actually no law applicable to the decision. To the extent that, say, legal principles are followed and different legal principles are followed, I think I answered this before, this may be part of comments, but not the center would not impose a decision or make a choice between different principles followed by the expert in determining the case.
Thank you, Andreas. That is all of the questions that I see in the Adobe Connect room. Are there any questions on the phone?
I'm showing no audio questions at this time. Please continue.
Operator, can you please poll for questions?
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions, please press the star followed by the one at this time. And if you're using speaker equipment, you'll need to lift the handset before making your selection. And I'm showing no audio questions at this time. Please continue.
Thank you, operator. All right, as there are no further questions on the phone or in the Adobe Connect room, I'm going to go ahead and bring to a close this webinar. Thank you again, everyone, for joining us this morning, and also a very special thank you for the ICC team for their time and for joining us and for participating on today's webinar. And I wish everyone a very happy new year. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference call for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.